You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. I am on Radio Albion, and today's date is the 20th of July, 2023. Unfortunately, I'm doing this by myself again, but there will be a time very soon, God willing, that we'll be, that Sven and I will be back to doing this together. I have so many projects in the works. I have a full comprehensive analysis of the Ukraine war, which I'll eventually turn into a book in a very short period of time. I'm writing a book on China. On my Patreon page, I uploaded a book on alleged war crimes during the Korean War and the Vietnam War, one from the South Koreans, the others from the U.S. and in Vietnam. I have a book on globalization and 10 million other things. And in order to continue, I need the financial assistance of my friends. Yes, I'm asking for money again. But unlike your typical university professor who has a captive audience and gets paid no matter how incompetent he is, I get paid, so to speak, through donations because my friends are getting something worthwhile from me. It's a very, very different relationship. Anyway, speaking of Ukraine, of course, I can't drift too far from this. And today's title is Turkey, NATO, and the regime. Those who follow the Daily Nationalist, what we've done with Sven over the last 5 years, Turkey comes up a lot. Turkey comes up a lot because it's pivotal to Middle Eastern and Southern European politics. It has the second largest military in NATO. It's essential for American foreign policy in the Middle East, especially now that Saudi Arabia has rejected the U.S. And the regime's media, which always does what it's told, doesn't know the first thing about what's happening in Turkey, doesn't know whether to love or hate Erdogan. And I think at the moment they're being told to love him. But Erdogan, of course, is a Turkish nationalist, and he supports the interest of Turkey as both a state and a nation. The U.S. is not going to give up on that stupid Kurdish issue. This is a communist movement, supported mostly by the private sector, of course. And so Turkey and NATO will never go back to how it was many years ago. But the U.S. also can't afford to lose it. Turkey's been in the process of playing one side off against another. Russia versus the West, Russia-China versus the West, for some time, and they've done very well. So this is not a huge, it's a little disappointing, but it's not entirely shocking. What am I talking about? Well, on the 11th of July, there was a two-day NATO summit in Lithuania. And without getting too drastic about it, Turkey has briefly sided with the West. They were opposed to Sweden being a member. They dropped their rejection of Sweden's NATO membership. in exchange for F-16 advanced American fighters being sold to Turkey. And to Putin's disappointment, there were five members of a private military, Azov or Azovstal, commanders going back into what's left of the combat zone. They were held in a Turkish prison. And of course, all of this, especially the prisoner issue, is in contravention of the agreement between Ankara, Kiev, and Moscow, and that their release would be held off until after the Ukraine conflict. And what I'm using here is an article by Joachim Hagopian, and we've cited him several times here, and it's dated the 13th of July, 2023. And that's how really he begins his article on it. Now, I don't tend to read and then comment like I usually do with Sven. I'll save that for him. I use these articles as jumping off points, prompts, so to speak. So, now we also know, well, some of us have seen the memes about Zelensky. He was in Ankara a couple weeks ago. And it's really the only kind of PR win that they could afford. I mean, they've lost on the battlefield. They have nothing. The West is not sending them weaponry because it's getting vaporized as it comes over the border. Not to mention they don't have the fuel or the ammunition or the trained people to run any of this stuff. But it's probably the only piece of good news Zelensky may have had. And it was just before the summit in Lithuania took place. But there's a reason that the so-called counteroffensive, I love how people use this word like they know something. Remember, Zelensky doesn't know what a rifle is. He doesn't know the difference between a division and a corps. He doesn't know the difference between, heavy and lighter artillery. He doesn't know anything. He's never even seen a battlefield in his life, and yet him dressing up in these stolen valor costumes while everyone else goes to die is awful. And he is very much like former president of Georgia, Chashkashvili. He goes into temper tantrums. I think he's always been like that. His mask has long since dropped off, and the only reason he functions is because of American sponsorship, no different than his Georgian counterpart, who, by the way, was forced into his cabinet as a condition for his election. The privatization of something, I don't know what's left to privatize. I've spent in his book, I'm putting together a long time on the nature of the IMF demands and the war and everything else. He's been placed in charge of that. Of course, you know, it's dominated by Western banks. But breaching an agreement with Russia or anyone else is normal for NATO, certainly regular for the U.S. But Turkey is maintaining positive ties with both sides. But the U.S. only functions by bullying, which is how they lost India, and they'll push too far with Turkey as well. So obviously, the counteroffensive was a total failure. Zelensky is an actor, so that's probably the only thing he understands is how propaganda works. But there's a reason for it. There's no fuel. There's no trained men. The transport system, the command system has fallen apart more than once. They've even purged people in the high command in Ukraine. I assume with American permission, either explicit or implicit. There's this strange disconnect, even with people who have a problem with the war, that because Ukraine has nothing, or I should say Kiev has nothing, all of this is purely symbolic. And Erdogan knows that. So after this set of events, he flew off to Snake Island and met with Ukrainian troops who are mostly Orthodox who have nothing to do with what Zelensky is. His popularity rating is probably in negative numbers now, kind of like Biden's at 3%. And he said something along the lines that the southern coastline, the access to Black Sea, is still controlled by a skeleton crew in Kiev. But very shortly, Russia is going to take that for itself. And wherever Russia takes, this is another aspect of the book, which is very important, what Russia is doing to rebuild these areas, their provisional administrations, and how, you know, for example, they have a program where a Russian city or town will adopt an Eastern Ukrainian city or town and connect for the process of rebuilding. And there's, you know, subsidies for that. And it's now a personal issue. The Russian economy has never been better. Ukraine doesn't have an economy. So, as I said, the abrupt change here, it's not some kind of treason. But the F-16 fighter deal, which was announced at actually the summit in Lithuania on the 11th, and that's the reason why he dropped his opposition to NATO membership. I see no benefit for any of these countries to being a part of NATO. I may have said this before, but let me reiterate. It takes a lot of money and investment and standardization to become a part of NATO. You have to be fully, not just your equipment, but your command structure and infrastructure has to be fully in tune with the rest of NATO. In other words, you can't use weaponry made somewhere else and be a member of NATO. It always has to be regularized and standardized. Strategy, how everything is organized, ranks, promotions, everything like that has to be at NATO standards. And how a country that borders Russia wants to be a member of NATO is beyond me. But Kiev is not going to be there. Now, the standards for entering NATO, just like entering the EU, have been thrown by the wayside. It's simply a political matter. Zelensky seems to have it in his head, or someone told him, that if he becomes a member of NATO, it automatically obligates the rest of NATO to attack Russia, which is certainly not true, since the West has already said we can't bring you in during wartime. It's not retroactive. But it's not a victory for Zelensky, the Erdogan thing. We know where Erdogan, where his support lies. The West is crumbling, it's disappearing, and the Russia-China axis is growing. Just a few months ago, Erdogan had rejected any kind of sanctions. And he loudly said, we are not bound by the West sanctions. And again, as a nationalist, he says, we are a strong and independent state, and we will always have a positive relationship with Russia. And he concluded by saying, Russia and Turkey need each other in every possible field. What he did the other day is symbolic, and he is very much aware of that. He has profited handsomely from his friendship with Vladimir Putin, and Erdogan has been neutral towards the Ukraine conflict. And he was reelected, despite the West's interference, propaganda, claiming that he had no support. But after the earthquake, he did win a sizable majority. But, you know, the F-16 is far more important to him than this symbolic prisoner exchange. So Putin, of course, and Russia retains that restraining identity, the Russo-China alliance. But as far as we're concerned, Russia specifically, as I was saying in the 1990s, before Putin even came around, is going to be the bulwark against liberalism and capitalism, that is to say, usury. But the U.S. is in no position, even if Erdogan were to completely turn his back on the West again, which he seems to want to do. A lot of his military equipment now is not interchangeable with NATO. Not to mention, there's also another issue, and this is one area where I disagree with Erdogan, but I understand that with the position that he's in, that once the F-16 deal came through, the Turkish government became more aggressive in dealing with Greece and their rights to the Aegean Islands, which is, of course, nonsense. These have been Greek since there was a history, any history. And Erdogan is in no position, not just over Aegean Islands, but, you know, of course, Cyprus. There's a fourth world state under Turkey. If you go back to my Cyprus, I think it was a two-part Cyprus lecture in, years ago, 17, maybe 16. You'll see how difficult Turkey's position is. The only reason that Turkish Republic and that little bit of Cyprus exists is because of Turkish subsidies. And of course, now the earthquake has sucked every bit of money out of the budget. But these are things that he does now because the F-16 deal fell through, and yet again, the West needs him. It just so happens, of course, that Greece is another member of NATO. And some of you may remember that back in early February of this year, the earthquake, which made no geological sense, killed about 50, 60,000 people. It wasn't along a fault line. It wasn't where the traditional earthquakes, because Turkey is prone to them, occur. It's in the northern, not the southern part of the country. And Erdogan and some of his people himself don't believe that this was necessarily a natural event. So the upshot is that Finland, Sweden have been permitted to join NATO. And Hagopian seems to suggest that after the earthquake, he then was in a position, because I guess they let him get reelected, he now has to support the West. And none of that is true. It's always in Erdogan's interest to look to Russia, because Russia has a functional and strong economy. And politically, Erdogan and Putin are very similar. And not to mention the simple fact that the West is quite capable of engaging in a color revolution. They've threatened it many times before. Now, it isn't true that there's a majority NATO calling for Kiev's expedited membership. Even Stoltenberg is questioning this. I mean, he's kind of an idiot. He's a child, very much like everyone in the ruling class in the West. And you have huge percentages of the European population that want nothing to do with it, at least those who know what the heck NATO is. Because the U.S. is demanding that they increase their military budgets for the first time ever, for the first time since the war, 1945. And, of course, engage Russia, confront Russia in a way that never, ever occurred during the Cold War. If you remember the awful uproar of the so-called Iran-Contra, where Israel was actually right in the middle of it, the point is that even any support for an anti-communist movement had to end. And the regime went nuts inventing things. It was a nonsensical thing. It wasn't illegal, but Congress was passing laws. You can't support Contras, whatever. And now look, the U.S. is out of it's long since been out of money, but out of ammunition. Hey, you make a big deal about the 3,000 reservists called up. That's not exactly threatening. But the U.S. stated Biden is completely gone, so he has no relevance. The regime has stated that they want to beef up American military presence in Central Europe, although no one bothers to ask where these numbers are coming from. And that explains 60,000 now it's going to be, 63,000? They want to get it up to 100,000. No one bothers to say, especially with what equipment. Erdogan, besides the prisoner Azov prisoner matter, which violated an earlier deal. He also claimed that he was pressuring Putin, as if he's in a position to do that, to extend the Black Sea grain deal. And he brokered that last summer concerning Ukraine and Russia's shipments of grain. Now, the regime went nuts thinking that because there's an embargo, that the world's going to starve. That just goes to show that Russia was feeding the world, but Ukraine has nothing to do with that. I've been following Ukraine's harvest, and they're about a third of what they were just a few years ago. They don't even have the manpower. They don't have the fuel. They don't have the equipment. You can't have a functional economy and a war this badly botched. And, of course, that make-believe uproar that Kiev's grain shipments, meant to be earmarked for needy African nations, both because they can't get their political act together, and the U.S. probably caused these shortages. It didn't matter because most of the grain went straight to the nations in the EU who don't need it. Remember, the U.S. pays farmers not to farm. Most of American arable land is not being farmed. A couple of states could very easily feed the world. You get Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska could feed the entire planet if all of its arable land were farmed. In other words, the American farmer was so efficient that he produced way more than was necessary, and so prices would go to zero, hence the need for quote-unquote price supports. So this was all a make-believe uproar. Africa, I guess, was always going to be needy, but on the other hand, they have been generally supportive of Russia. And one of the few things that South Africa does well is talk the rest of Africa into supporting BRICS. And it shouldn't surprise anyone that the cargo ships for this have been covertly used to ship weapons through Odessa. Odessa is a Jewish, or at least was the Jewish capital of Ukraine, and Ukraine, Poland was the Jewish capital of the world. So Russia is threatening to pull out of this grain deal, and remember, he holds all the cards. Russia's agricultural policy is far more rational. They've banned GMO back in 2016, so now their grain is in higher demand than ever, and Putin has every reason now to shut it down. Erdogan became a statesman of global significance because he brokered that deal concerning a humanitarian cause. And he gained, as Agopian says, because he functioned as a middleman, charging these ships access to the Black Sea through the Dardanelles, formerly of the great Byzantine Empire, now controlled by Turkey. And it's very possible, and I lean towards accepting this, that the apparent betrayal here concerning whether it be the prisoner deal or especially or the NATO thing, is that Turkey's release of these prisoners gives Russia now the clear reason to pull out of the deal without altering their relationship. Remember, Putin almost every day outsmarts the West. The regime is great at making money and propaganda and justifying usury, but that's about it. Especially now that the gloves are off and they're just banning everything they can. But I'm willing to say that that might well be true. Now, what these people mean when they talk about, you know, Stoltenberg fast-tracking this end-around, I've been through many times before what it takes to be a NATO member. And about half the members aren't even close to meeting that. So as far as combat is concerned, it's irrelevant. Remember, it was great to have the U.S. financing the defense of Western Europe so they didn't have to finance it. Take a look at the ministers of defense of these countries. They're all women who don't know what a battlefield looks like, not even in a video game. Well, they could afford to do that when the U.S. is spending all the money. Trump kind of made a big deal about that for a while, and whoever's running the White House is doing the same. Now, the fast-track idea is that Ukraine, despite it not having a military anymore, and not being able to function economically or military anymore, still should be brought into NATO at one time or another. I don't believe that even if Ukraine became a NATO member tomorrow, that this would automatically mean American military action. It's not retroactive. Russia's invasion, or its preemptive invasion of Ukraine in February of last year, Eastern Ukraine. They were not a member of NATO at the time. So if they become a NATO member now, it's not an issue, which is why, but to avoid the confusion, the West is saying, you know, not where the war is going on. Zelensky is starting to believe his own press. Remember, Ukraine's a one-party state, and he says this is how it's going to be. And his claim to be the new Israel, or the new Khazaria, he is adopting Zionist tactics in terms of being a total security state. Everything is censored, church shut down, most of it anyway, in the name of national security. This is what Zelensky is demanding. But like all the people who fight for the West, I can't think of the guy in Georgia. Anyway, they tend to lose it. They tend to lose contact with reality because they start believing their own press. I mean, Zelensky, you've seen the memes now. He didn't even want to go there, this little man, unless this quote-unquote roadmap was laid out ahead of time. But even the weekend at Bernie's, Biden said it just was too premature. Now, it doesn't mean anything. Biden personally has no relevance. I just came across the Pew Research poll that says 3% of Americans want him as president for another term. That doesn't mean anything. He could probably count on maybe 10% of the vote. So if he does run again, they're going to have to really fake it to the point where it's not going to be not going to be very easy to hide. And here's what the idiot, this Zelensky, wrote on Telegram. And he's talking about how NATO treats him. Well, at the same time, vague wording about conditions is added even for inviting Ukraine. It seems there is no readiness either to invite Ukraine to NATO nor to make it a member of the alliance. This means that a window of opportunity is being left to bargain Ukraine's membership in NATO in negotiations with Russia. And for Russia, this means motivation to continue its terror. Uncertainty is weakness. And I will openly discuss this at the summit. Well, if he did, no one paid any attention. No one is sending more equipment to a war that's so blatantly lost. But the regime does love the idea. Its Jewish Khazar elements love the idea of Ukrainians being killed. The Cossacks were vehemently anti-Judaic, destroyed their economic institutions in the 17th and 18th century in the Polish Commonwealth. The Cossacks were involved in completely destroying, smashing up the Kahal system. I mean, they absolutely asked for it. They were tyrants, but, the regime does not mind seeing Ukrainians die or Russians die. So, as Hagopian called him, the little dictator, NATO put out a statement on July 11th, and a piece of it goes like this. We reaffirm the commitment we made at the 2008 summit in Bucharest that Ukraine will become a member of NATO. And today we recognize that Ukraine's path to full Euro-Atlantic integration has moved beyond the need for the membership action plan. So they say things without saying anything. You need a unanimous vote to bring someone else in. And it's difficult to expect that. And they use this really weak excuse that Ukraine can't come in because, quote, additional democratic and security sector reforms have not been accomplished. They're not even a de facto member. Let me quote from the Telegraph, UK Telegraph from July 8th. Fearful Germany preparing to block Ukraine's NATO membership bid. That was their headline. And this, you know, publication, along with its government and NATO countries in general, they're, you know, all in for a world war. Any nation that dares to balk or think twice at plunging off the cliff is labeled fearful, especially by Zelensky. Now, Olaf Scholz, we know, is as Agopian says, a vassal of the regime. And he was part of the U.S. destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline. But Germany isn't alone at being iffy about this. It's doubtful if Ukraine is going to be a member anytime soon. But within a few months, Russia will steamroll its way to victory, meeting now token resistance. I love how, you know, these policymakers, they think that we're going to send F-16s to Ukraine. We're going to send cluster munitions, which are nasty things. 97% of the casualties from cluster munitions are civilians and mostly children. But they have no way to deliver it. They don't have an air force. Do these people think you could train a pilot for 6 months and that's it? He's a fighter pilot now? But that's the level of thought here. The Baltics have always been in favor of NATO expansion. But I did see a poll, and in fact, Agopian makes reference to it. About half the polls are against Ukraine's NATO membership for a couple of reasons. Number one, they don't want the increased war. That certainly will come from that. And number two, they think that Ukraine is going after Ukrainian parts of Polish territory. So most Poles apparently want World War III, and they'd probably be the first to die. There is a Russia-hating brainwash, just like in most of Romania, succumbing to propaganda and the fact that Russian news agencies are banned. And again, can you imagine this happening during the Cold War? Nothing of the sort ever happened. There were no sanctions in the Soviet Union. The U.S. wasn't spending itself broke to support anti-communist movements. It didn't happen. But the cluster munitions issue is symbolic, not only because of how nasty it is, because many countries, there have been several conventions, 2008, 2010, that have banned them, but they have no way to deliver them. Even the little bit of artillery ammunition they have left, they don't have the crews to shoot it. Whatever they have left is so, the barrels are so worn. And Russia is mopping them up now. But as far, and Hagopian quotes John Kirby, who's an idiot, spokesman for the National Security Council. He said, "We can all agree that more civilians have been and will continue to be killed by Russian forces than will more likely be hurt by the use of these cluster munitions. We're very mindful of the concerns about civilian casualties and unexploded ordnance being picked up by civilians or children and being hurt, of course. We are mind of that." I think he meant mindful of that. But since 2010, 123 nations have banned this. And I have the study, actually, that showed 97% of those who die are civilians, and two out of the three are children. It's an indiscriminate weapon, but Ukraine has no way to use them. And Kirby just admitted the U.S. is knowingly committed war crimes with civilian victims, which is no problem as far as the regime is concerned. And Russia would never harm its own ethnic Russian people in the East. But they may, if there's some way to deliver these munitions, the kids who are going to be killed are Russians. So it doesn't make any difference. But you even have a handful of, at least a strong proportion in the U.S. and NATO that's vehemently opposed to the use of cluster munitions. I think most of you know what it is. They have an artillery version. They have a bomb that gets dropped out of a plane. And the bomb contains, well, what they look, at least in the airborne one, has what looks like little circular hand grenades in it. And when that explodes, it spreads these other explosives over a wide area. Very inaccurate. Unless they're in the middle of nowhere, it really can't be used, but it just doesn't matter. And because not all of the little hand grenade looking things explode, they're sitting around for a long time. There's been quite a bit of protest there. And the media is still awaiting its orders as to what to think. But this is the fanaticism against the nation that's been tasked to be the Kahon, the restrainer, against the powers of darkness, which is, unfortunately, the United States. At least we can take some comfort in the fact the U.S. has lost and has lost over and over and over again over the last 20, 30 years. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.